I know for myself, learning had always been about seeking knowledge to cram into my brain and then use as a tool to seem smart. Or, and worse, a weapon to beat people up intellectually whose views differed from my own. Learning for me has now become a process of discernment, which means to image at work concepts, ideas, and theories to be able to see to the design and worldview that drives them. This has led me over time to be more considering of the external effects in my approach to life and business. Welcome back to Business Second Opinion Podcast. I want to take a minute and thank our sponsor, Guayaki. Right now, I actually have a very fresh, cold can of enlightenment sitting right next to me, and man, is it good. Guayaki brews an enlivening beverage from naturally caffeinated, nourishing leaves from a species of holly that you know as mate. It contains 24 vitamins and minerals, 15 amino acids, and abundant polyphenols. On top of that, they support community and ecosystem regeneration, bringing together art, music, and celebrations in many locations. Stay up to date on their events at guayaki.com. Business Second Opinion Podcast digs deep to explore questions about business and business practice. Ones you may not know you need to be asking, but we believe you should. And in the process of examining them, we give you a second opinion. As you know by now, a contrarian opinion. But one that's well tested and proven to give you the outcomes you want without the nasty side effects. I'm Zach Swartout. And with me as always is Carol Sanford, our in-house positive contrarian, responding to big hard questions with a radically different take. Hey, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
So the biggest and most commonly asked question we've received in the past month is, what is your take on what got us into the mess that we're in, including the fallout from this novel coronavirus pandemic and the economic crisis that's brewing at the moment? And more importantly, how do we get out of it? This is a pretty big question to tackle today, Carol.
Yes, it is. It's very complex. I've been watching a lot of people write about this, and I know that we need to start in a different place than most of those articles, blogs, and advice, and get more into what it means into a regenerative approach and a regenerative path. And I'm hoping that we can, and even in this 30-minute episode, give people a way to start and to really see what it would mean to come at it from a regenerative door and maybe give them a few resources.
So anyone who listens to us regularly will know we believe that how we think filters, influences, and in a lot of cases determines what we can think about. Not only that, but it also determines what we can see, how we're likely to behave and intervene, and ultimately the results we get from all this, which is really quite a lot tied into what these authors call a soft skill. In the past, we've talked about how when we see the world and people unconsciously as machines, that thinking has us treating them like expendable pieces or automatons that we can pay to take direction from us and do repetitive work over and over and over again without stopping.
Ouch. Boy, you know, I did notice that the author called these soft skills. And I think that's often used, not necessarily by him, but as kind of a demeaning phrase. It's meant to say it doesn't carry very much weight. In other words, it doesn't produce dollars. But I really think, and I'm sure you'd agree with me, that these are really more what might be called hidden skills, that they may create more impact than anything else on the bottom line and top line. So our work today, at least from my perspective, is to provide a framework for better thinking capability. I might be willing to call it critical thinking skills too, but a different version of them. But we always push off of a Harvard Business Review article on the subject. So what are we using today?
So I found this article called How to Build Critical Thinking Skills that I think is pretty typical of the conventional thinking. It's by Matt Plummer from the October 11th, 2019 issue. So in it, Plummer says that you should follow his four-phase process to assess your workers using a synthesis of three research-backed critical thinking-focused models. Whew, that was a mouthful. This process starts from a foundation of ensuring your workers have aptitude in verbal reasoning, decision-making, and problem-solving, and then jumps off from there.
Okay, well, those sound like kind of decent subjects to most of us, right? But what was your assessment of the advice that he gave, and how did you start to think about what he was writing as you read?
Yeah, so I'm just going to start to lay these things out first, and then we'll start to dive into them a little bit deeper. But just for more of an overview here, as a business owner, Plummer lays out for me these four phases that he calls execute, synthesize, recommend, and generate that I'll run through quickly for our listeners. So again, from the perspective of me reading this as a business owner, at the execute phase, the goal here is to train my people to tell them to do what I instruct them to do. In other words, turn instructions into action, as he calls it. After they can do that, then I can move them to a synthesize phase, where I train my people to figure out what's important information versus not important and be able to relay that information onto others. The third phase is recommend, where I train my worker to reason through decisions before they recommend their ideas to others. I do this by making sure that I avoid giving them my opinion, but make sure to ask them how they came to their decisions and ensuring that it came through sound reasoning. The fourth and final phase is called generate, where I need to train my workers by role modeling and inviting them to mimic me in how I go about creating my own projects by taking input from other people and myself. Also, once they start doing all this on their own, I actually need to vet these ideas with them.
Yeah, I see all sorts of challenges with this in terms of the effects that has on people to do what he described. But what did you see as the effect of that whole process?
Yeah, so if I just look at it from a larger view, again, from this business owner perspective, the effect on me is that it implies that my workers need to think, act, and do like me, or they won't ever be able to be effective workers. It seems to imply that I've hired blank slates or robots I need to program.
I think that and another idea that I had is it all seems pretty shallow. I mean, first, it's all internally focused. It's me and my workers. There's no connection to any external work. There's also the way of doing it has a tendency, as you say, more like robots. It doesn't actually teach them how to think except from the base he gives. So I don't know, it feels to me like that it is not really giving us an answer or thinking about what we got into in terms of the mess and what will get us out. I don't know. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think what's missing here for me is a fundamental belief that people have unique contributions to bring and that the mind that can learn to see like the mind of a CEO is what's necessary to build as a capability. Also, I'm not sure getting everyone to think the same leads to innovation, which we keep going over and over again, which I can tell you at a small company like mine, we desperately need to build every single individual that works with us as an endeavor to execute.
Yeah. We love giving contrarian opinions. I'd like to offer a contrasting framework to this author's idea of what critical thinking is and how it gets done. Particularly, I'm thinking about what capability are you building and using as you work on developing critical thinking skills. It's like they're in a box from the way he's presenting it, rather than thinking about what capability does it take and how do you work with people to do that. It'll take a little time, I'm afraid, to demonstrate this. So I'm going to ask our listeners to hang in for a few minutes and hopefully it'll all make sense. You ready to join me on doing that?
Definitely, more than ready. It seems we need something that doesn't flatten the view of humans, but actually uplifts us, particularly at this moment in history. We need to find ways to be capable of such greater contribution with one another and the systems in which we're nested.
Yeah, okay. So this is a long time thing for me. I've felt for over four decades that there are four foundational changes, and how I understand them has grown enormously in that time. But if we're really going to understand the world and we're going to pursue helping change it, I think these four things really matter. They underlie everything you hear from us here. You can tell we're using it. And I want to make them very explicit today. First, we need to change how we learn and how we formulate knowledge and how we share it with others. This is called an epistemology. Epistemology has a lot to do with learning and knowing, acquiring knowledge and understanding eventually. I believe that we have outdated, if they were ever useful, incomplete, and sometimes completely wrong ways of creating and bringing about how people can know what we can know and how we can share it.
Right. So another way of thinking about epistemology is that it really encapsulates this idea of what we're allowed to know and how we come to learn things.
Well, like this guy, right, in the article, they know it from him. That's a really good example. So let's come back to that and how we're going to go about it doing it. But in the second foundational aspect we need to look at is we need to change how we think the world works, which is a paradigm shift required of us. And that's not so easy. We have really incomplete ideas about how the planet we live on, the societies we live in, even work. This is called having a cosmology.
It's funny that you say the word cosmology. I immediately put in my head folks like Carl Sagan and Neil deGrasse Tyson. What these guys saw through their cosmology was a universe that's alive. And in how they talked about it are demanding of us to consider more deeply how we believe the universe works. We also might call this a worldview. The ask here is not so much to say that we have one, but to reflect on its implications and effects.
Yeah, and for sure, get so we can notice that we even have one. So the third one, we need to have a better idea, not only of how the universe works, as Sagan and Tyson tell us, but we also need a better idea of how humans work, their psychology, their mentation, why they behave the way they do. We need a better process by which to frame that understanding than what we consider is normal and expected currently.
Yeah, like not seeing humans as fixed through time or analogizing them as rats or machines.
Right, exactly. And maybe how do they grow themselves to be self-managing? The fourth of the four foundations we're talking about leads us to needing to see the foundation of everything as a capability challenge and in need of a developmental approach to grow people. We have a capability crisis that underlies all these other crises, and we need to have a massive systemic way to shift that.
Yeah, it's funny. We actually talked about that last time. And developing literally means unfolding a nascent aspect of an ability within us, like consciousness, for example, and critical thinking, but more along the lines of how we think about it.
Yeah. If you read what's in the news today, it is all basically how to deal with the horrible outcomes that come from crisis, and particularly pandemics in the past, or how to use it all to create something more positive as an outcome to overcome the negative. The opposition of negative to me, or the opposite of negative, is not necessarily positive next steps. At least there is an intervening opportunity where we need to think about shifting things and this thinking capability so we don't find ourselves fighting over even what the next level would mean. The real opportunity, it seems here, is to evolve these four foundational cornerstones now, so that they can let us design the next evolution more effective rather than just deal with the fallout of the systems we've got and how they're going to threaten our existence.
So if I'm following here, what you're getting at is that we're in a thinking capability and being management capability crisis, not an optimism or course correction crisis. This capability stuff really kind of underlies everything. And that seems like a big step, but it sounds so slow at the same time, Carol. Do we actually have time for this? And for that matter, how do we begin to move that way if we want to give people a way to take it on?
Yeah, I'm used to that. Actually, it's the very fastest way, since if you think about everything we try and argue and move around is like moving sort of deck chairs on the Titanic. We actually have to build a different ship, and in this case, a different mind. My experience is that it's incredibly fast. Once I'm working with it in a company or a community and people who are deeply engaged, it's a few months when they start to see things differently. A year before they start to make major changes in everything they affect. So it's actually the fastest way, since it underlies everything and it avoids that Sisyphean effort where you feel like you're pushing things uphill only to have it slide back down. Well, let's test that a little. Let's start with the first foundational aspect that I suggested, which is the epistemological crisis we have, which is how we teach, how people learn. And at the moment, that is all from an expert and the teacher as expert, or the boss as expert, or the parent as expert. You hope they absorb what you're giving them, and then you test for absorption and usually throw in a reward after that.
Yeah, the sad part is many people agree that this expert mode is the best way to teach, while sugarcoating the whole thing by trying to make learning fun, interactive, and application-based. But that's not what you're questioning or suggesting here, right? Because really, that's just a more clever and sophisticated version of the same epistemology. Transfer knowledge in more creative ways and do it faster.
Right. Socrates saw that for what it was. It was a way to control minds by controlling what people had access to. And it's been adopted by every institution, I think, since institution existed, including the family institution. A few people, this is what it says, a few people know the important stuff that's needed, and they transfer it by teaching, coaching, mentoring, role modeling to those who don't know.
And that is, in essence, how we socialize humans when they're born, or and join a family, or are hired by us, or embrace a faith, or join a mission to defend. And it's time-honored, right? But it's what falls out of this is a capability to hold multiple perspectives. This ultimately causes a tremendous amount of harm by dropping out the ability to be discerning about how our thoughts lead to actions, which lead to effects that we are asleep to.
Right. And that was Socrates only ever asked questions. And he was not, contrary to what some people think, had the answer waiting for you to get it. No, he was hoping you'd have something better than he did. So the alternative is to re-examine what Socrates was killed for. Teaching people how to think, rigorously examine their own mind and the ideas that others bring about in some formal disciplined process, to utilize these kind of processes to disrupt our mechanical processes.
That's why our school is about breaking the habit of being taught knowledge. Instead, we learn to examine proffered ideas, outcomes, and effects of ideas, if we're exposed to them, and before we decide to utilize them. That's why our prime directive is never accept or reject anything offered without testing it in practice and bringing your own thinking through reflective experience.
Right. And that doesn't mean testing it by debate testing, but it means to embody it and really experience test it and see how you feel after you try something a new way. Then you can reject it or accept it. That's the role of many of the instruments we bring you here on Business Second Opinion and are a part of our change agent and our community business programs. We ask people to consider giving up expertise, and that's a very hard first step. Give up coaching, where you're transferring through a much softer way how people can see it, and mentoring, because mentors are, unless you have peer mentoring, and even then, it's tricky because it can slide easily into knowledge transfer. Instead, what you want to be doing is developing people to generate better quality of thinking as a person and as a community.
Yeah, I know for myself, learning had always been about seeking knowledge to cram into my brain and then use as a tool to seem smart or, and worse, a weapon to beat people up intellectually whose views differed from my own. Learning for me has now become a process of discernment, which means to image at work concepts, ideas, and theories to be able to see to the design and worldview that drives them. This has led me over time to be more considering of the external effects in my approach to life and business.
Yeah, so what we're talking about here is a cosmology shift also. That was our second one. So let's do a bit of what Neil deGrasse Tyson works on. His favorite lesson is think as a scientist, where what you know is less important than how you think. He says that repeatedly. I think we are saying, think like a philosopher or maybe an ecological scientist, and that how you think again here is more important than what you can know.
How we think about how the world works has led us to simultaneous systems collapsing in short order, as we're seeing right now. Last episode, we talked about how we should learn to see imperatives in the world. So just to remind everyone from the last episode, global imperatives invite us to consider what's necessary to evolve a particular whole or system. Man, Carol, this is a really different way of thinking critically than teaching someone to repeat their assignments back to me to make sure they know what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. Well, we've built systems on sinking sand and false premises, like our education system you're talking about, and also about how the universe that we live in works, the planets that we live on, and the social engagements we have, how they're happening, how they're working. We built all of those on falsehoods. Our economics does not understand how healthy functioning as a person and exchange among folks works in conjunction with our economics. Our scientists have created fragmented views of how subsets of systems work, like rivers within a watershed or within on a continent. And we don't even understand the idea of wholes, grasping a whole, working with a whole, and what that would require of us.
In other words, we're not thinking as a scientist or philosopher of a whole system science. We see the world as dead rather than living. Whew, that's a sad thought. But let's try to pick it up here and go to the third one.
Well, I think probably we've done enough for today, and we'll come back to those last two. So we ask people to join us for episode 148. And we'll get it back to you as soon as we can.
Carol Sanford Institute has been offering online development for almost a decade, so we're pretty good at it by now. What we're offering is a set of free morning meetings that we're starting up very, very soon, where we look at how to transform uncertainty into action based on systems thinking that can inform how you live through times of crisis, your daily decisions, and how you help others. Join our newsletter to get invitation-only links to the recordings if you miss the live online events.
We felt like the timing was right also to form another of our regenerative life communities, the Regenerative Educator Community. It's for anyone who's in education and development roles who considers themselves an educator. Yep, that's what I'm working on. The community is established to enable its members to work within this developmental epistemology we just talked about. And that is how we want to help people learn to educate, to move from this expert view to an experiential developmental view based on the 7 first principles of regeneration you've heard us speak about. If you want to know more about that, check out Seed, that's SEED-communities.com to learn more and look under the Regenerative Life offerings.
Also, don't forget, for women entrepreneurs, check out the same link for communities just for you.
And please keep listening to Business Second Opinion for more ideas on how to work from a regenerative paradigm in practice like we've been talking about today to become more discerning. And my new book, The Regenerative Life, is out 3 weeks ago with an extensive workbook that goes with book club materials if you're able to buy things in bulk. There's more about this at carolsanford.com.
And thanks again to our sponsors at Guayaki in your pursuit of regeneration with high integrity. By the way, if you want one of our Get a Second Opinion mugs, send us your article on topics on practices and business where you need a second opinion. You can email us at carol@businesssecondopinion.com or find us on Twitter at biz_second_opinion. If we use it to develop an episode, you get a mug. Also, your ratings and reviews on any platform help people find us and spread the word. Sign up for our newsletter so you can get connections to the show notes and much more.
And I need to thank Numi T. They have for 3 years sponsored our Business Second Opinion show notes, and to Babson College, who has sponsored the Regenerative Business Summit and the prize annually online. So check out Business Second Opinion website if you want more information about them and what else they're supporting. Join Numi T as a champion of our podcast.
This has been Business Second Opinion.